for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. President Obama and New York Mayor Bloomberg say the construction of an Islamic center and mosque on private property near Ground Zero is a matter of religious freedom. But a number of prominent Republicans have joined some of the families of those killed on 9/11 in opposing the project. Since 2002, an Episcopal bishop, a Jewish rabbi, and a Muslim scholar have been meeting to address misunderstandings among their religions. They join me in the studio to talk about the current controversy as well as general attitude toward Islam nearly a decade after 9/11. The Right Reverend John Chain is Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington. Good morning to you, sir. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good morning.
And Bruce Lustig is the Senior Rabbi of the Washington Hebrew Congregation. Good morning, Rabbi.
Good morning, Diane.
And Akbar Ahmed is Chair of Islamic Studies at American University. Good to see you again, sir.
Good morning, Ty.
And throughout the hour, I'll look forward to hearing your questions, your comments, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Join us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Professor Ahmed, what do we know about the plans for the center?
What we know, Diane, is that we need to look at it not only as the plans to build a mosque at a certain place in the United States of America, but to place this in the cultural context of the United States today. We are really living in a climate, in a very special climate after 9/11. All communities feel that they are under siege, white, non-whites, Christians and non-Christians. And therefore, when Muslims plan to build a mosque so near the center, World Trade Center site itself, it's bound to create this reaction. Most Americans would feel that this is pouring salt into raw wounds. Now, I, as a Muslim, 100% would support any house of worship, especially a mosque. At the same time, I, as someone living in America, would always exhort and people living in the Muslim world to be very sensitive to the cultural background within which we are living.
Tell me about the name change from the Cordoba Center to Park 51.
I think, again, Imam Rauf is well-meaning in the sense that he hoped to have a kind of interfaith center where the different religions, especially the Abrahamic, would be able to meet and discuss and promote interfaith understanding. Cordoba, of course, immediately evokes Muslim Spain. This was the high point of culture, and especially a culture that brought together Jews and Muslims and Christians at this 1,000 years ago. But it was evocative to many Muslims, non-Muslims, of a Muslim name. Cordoba itself was a city which was part of Muslim Spain then, of course, now in Spain. So therefore, he shifted it to a more anonymous sounding Park 51.
And tell us who the imam actually is. There's been a great deal written about him.
Yes, again, I find this very interesting, Diane. And as you know, you're reading my book, Journey into America. I analyze Muslims in America in the context of their own culture, so that the African Americans would be much more sensitive to American culture. A lot of the immigrants from the Middle East or South Asia would sometimes do things on a theoretical level and not fully appreciate American local culture and its sensitivities. The imam is, of course, of Arab background from the Middle East. His wife is South Asian. So again, immigrants, well-meaning, but perhaps slightly disconnected from culture and therefore not anticipating this reaction, which would have surely surprised them, as it has surprised so many other people.
Akbar Ahmed, he's Chair of Islamic Studies at American University. His latest book is titled Journey into America, The Challenge of Islam. Turning to you, Bishop Shane, what did you think of President Obama's statement regarding the construction of the mosque and its location?
Well, first of all, the response to the remarks that he made at the dinner at the White House on Friday evening were remarks that I would expect any president of the United States to make. Those remarks basically reaffirm the value of the Constitution, the rule of law, plurality of religion in this country, and the right to worship and to be able to worship in an environment and a location which meets your needs. What was said on Saturday in terms of somewhat of an offhand comment to reporters who were with him when he was down in Louisiana, I think was somewhat unfortunate because it raised some ambiguity in where the president really is in terms of his own emotion regarding the issues. Now, you got to separate emotion from being the leader of the free world, but at the same time, I think it really raised some issues as to what does the president really mean.
So you feel had he left his statement as he made it at the dinner last week, he would not have raised those ambiguities.
I know that would be true, and it would be very difficult for people to attack a statement like that, the one that he made on Friday evening, just because of his position and because of the Constitution of the United States.
The Right Reverend John Chain, he's Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington. Rabbi Lustig, the Anti-Defamation League has taken a stance on this issue. Explain what it is and what your reaction is.
Well, the Anti-Defamation League has taken a stance that at the particular time they're feeling as an organization is that although there's a right to build the mosque, there is a sensitivity that has greater concern. And so even though their board and others have come out that this is caused great angst within them, as it is in the American public, they have made a stand, which is very uncommon for them to make such a stand. I think on a level that if you see that the Central Conference of American Rabbis, the reform movements, the URJ, our Rabbi Eric Yaffe, in addition to a beautiful article that was written in the New York Times, appeared in the Washington Post by the Hebrew Union College's president, Rabbi David Ellenson, spoke, you know, to the other hand, that what is first and foremost important is for us to preserve the right of any house of worship to be built and the opportunity that we have in America to have freedom of worship. And so I think that there are many people like the general public, who are very caught in a real bind here between the emotional feel of sensitivity to the families of 9/11 and the reality that the principles of religious freedom are far too great to put them at risk. When Akbar and I were talking the other day on the phone about this issue across the country, we were reminded, you know, Pastor Martin Niemöller wrote in 1946 a piece that when he gave a speech in Nazi Germany, he wrote that they first came for the communists, and I didn't speak up, I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak up, I wasn't a trade unionist. And then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. And then they came for me, and by that time there was no one left to speak up. I think it's something we need to think about because it's a slippery slope when we begin to try to step in on this incredible freedom that we have in the United States, the opportunity to worship freely and the opportunity to build our houses of worship when and where we need to.
And just so you and our listeners know, we did invite the ADL to appear on this program after a number of back and forths and a number of questions on their part. They did decline. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Dr. Ahmed, do you think that this is simply an isolated case because of the location, or is something more broad going on?
Diane, this is such a crucial question, and I hope America takes heed of my answer. There is a climate building up, a climate of intolerance, of hatred even, around Muslims. It is dangerous because it is not just this particular mosque. The attacks on mosques are frequent. They're across the country. The span is, the intensity, both are increasing. My book will give you many examples of mosques. We went to 100 mosques, some of them just under some kind of pressure, you know, the parking lot controversy or something like that. But some actually firebombed with graffiti on them, Nazi graffiti.
Give me an example of where you found those.
Columbia, Tennessee. It was firebombed with the Nazi graffiti on them. And the local people said, go home. And the Muslims said, we are home. This is our home. We've grown here. This, we are citizens. And then a heroic priest, Pastor Williams, stepped in, a Presbyterian. And he came to the Muslim community and said, here are the keys to my church. Go to my church and worship there. And if you find something offensive, I'll remove it. So you have both aspects of American society reacting. It is a far wider phenomenon. It really needs to be checked here before it gets out of hand.
Bishop Shane, do you feel the same kind of pressure?
I really do. And I think that what this event does is it just raises it up to a level where we can begin to take a hard, hard look at it. I think what it does is it raises the issue of the inability of this country. We're bicultural in many ways. We're a country that's under great economic pressure right now. That we have millions of people who are out of work. There's a great deal of frustration with Congress. It is an easy out to pick on an issue like this and elevate it to a point where it becomes a religious issue. But I really do believe that we have not come very far since 9/11.
The Right Reverend John Shane. He's Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about the politics. For the political fallout for politicians on both sides at the issue of the construction of a mosque near Ground Zero. Joining us by phone from Cape Cod, Dan Senor. He's adjunct senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Diane.
And joining us from his office here in Washington, Barry Lynn. He's Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Good morning to you, Barry.
Thanks, Diane, very much.
And indeed, you're most welcome. Dan, let me start with you. The President and Mayor Bloomberg have said this is a matter of religious freedom and property rights. You call the location, quote, inappropriate and insensitive. Tell us why.
Well, I think the president and the mayor have set up a sort of straw man argument, at first at least, in which they said that this is, you are either for religious freedom or you are for stopping this project, the Cordoba Initiative. The truth is, where my position, I think many people's position is, you can absolutely recognize that it is a freedom of religion issue, that it is a private property issue. The Constitution absolutely protects the right of Imam Ra'uf and his and the fellow leaders of this project to proceed with it. It doesn't mean it's the right thing to do, And there was an opportunity, I think, which was tragically missed, for the president and the mayor to use their bully pulpits to make the case for, while they may have the right to do this, they should think about whether or not it's really going to advance the objectives that the imam says he's trying to meet, that it really is going to bring people together. I happen to think it's going to be very divisive. It's going to set New York City back. I say this as someone who lives in the neighborhood where this mosque would go up. And they could make the case to the leaders for finding another location.
All right.
Saying they still stand up for these principles.
Barry Lynn, divisive, setting the city back. What's your view?
Well, obviously, if we take Dan's position, we'll never find out whether this is divisive or whether this actually brings neighborhoods and nations together. There are powerful interests, and certainly powerful interests, that say, look, this is so painful, we shouldn't do it. There are also powerful interests, though, that the Muslim community should become a part of a reconciliation process, and that, indeed, if they choose that this is the way to do that, it really is up to them. I think Dan has an overly technical understanding of what religious freedom is. Religious freedom isn't simply what the Constitution permits, but here it is an affirmation that religious freedom means you have freedom for every group. No one is a second-class citizen. No group is to be treated differently because of the conduct of a few people who purported to act on its behalf.
Barry Lynn, what about the president's first statement and then his, quote, clarification? Did that confuse the issue in your mind?
I think, frankly, the press has confused the issue in the minds of Americans, but I don't think there's anything particularly hypocritical or confusing about the two comments. He was talking about the Constitution, and he was talking about freedom of religion, but he also recognized that it is the owners of this property, listening to all sides, that need to make the final judgment about whether this is or is not constructed. So I don't think that he has anything to apologize for. I do think, Diane, in all candor, that some other politicians do have some things to account for.
All right.
I just don't think that the comments of people like Newt Gingrich or Sarah Palin are legitimate. They are the crassest kinds of political doggerel and really an insult to the intelligent debate around this question.
Dan Senor, you've raised questions about Imam Faisal himself. In a piece you've written for the Wall Street Journal, you suggest he's a radical who wants to bring Sharia law to the U.S. But at the same time, didn't the Bush administration use him as an intermediary with the Muslim world after 9/11?
Well, let me say two things. First, in response to what Barry said, this is not about Newt Gingrich and it's not about Sarah Palin as much as Barry and other defenders of the project would like to use them as straw men, too. Majority of New York City residents are opposed to this, and this comes up in the Siena poll and the Quinnipiac poll and poll after poll by objective news organizations. Overwhelming majority of New York City residents are against this. So let's start with the fact that a majority of New Yorkers have serious concerns that should be taken seriously, and we should have a real discussion about it. There's no need to suppress people's concerns. Secondly, as it relates to your question, Diane and Imam Rauf, look, there's big questions about where he's getting the funding for this project. In the past, he's gotten funding from the Kingdom Foundation from Saudi Arabia, which has funded madrasas, radical madrasas in Pakistan. He's someone who refuses to call Hamas a terrorist organization. He has said some very provocative things and borderline inflammatory things about terrorism and what motivates terrorism and the cause of terrorism, that, you know, when you combine those statements with a number of his associations, with his past funding sources, one can have a serious discussion. I think we should seriously explore what his real objectives are. Why is he so hell-bent on building this mosque two blocks from ground zero?
All right.
Dan,
he could have done it.
Hold on just a moment, Barry. Let me ask you about New Yorkers who are opposed to this issue and polls taken across the country which echo that sentiment. What's your reaction?
Well, I certainly understand the incredible feelings that people have in the city of New York. And if we did, in fact, do everything, make every decision based on what a majority would want, then, of course, I suppose this mosque would not be being built where it is expected to be built. But we don't take those kinds of polls. We look at the experience, as one of your previous guests mentioned, in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, a big fight over having a mosque there had nothing to do with 9/11. Temecula, California, Wisconsin, in Florida, they're going to have a Quran burn up and the anniversary of 9/11, and the hostility to the Islamic community across the board is intense, and it is of course being flamed, and that's why I bring up people like Mr. Gingrich and Ms. Palin.
All right.
Because they are inflaming the worst of American sentiments at a time of what we really need is a clear and deep understanding of it. As far as the imam, he is a Sufi. He has out of the more mystical tradition. He is considered a liberal. You pointed out correctly, George Bush sent him to do work on religious freedom. Obama wants to send him. If we cannot deal with people like him, moderate Islamic voices here, then how in the world can we deal with the moderate Islamic forces we're trying to talk to in Iraq and Afghanistan?
What about the funding, Barry Lynn?
I don't think there's been any evidence suggesting this is some kind of a plot or a conspiracy to promote radical Islam. In fact, there's no credible evidence to support that at all. And even Dan says, well, we ought to investigate it. We don't build or make constitutional decisions either based on a fund that might have entered a pot of money decades ago or last year or last month. There's just no evidence for that.
All right.
Barry, can I ask a question? Is there any circumstance based on his funding sources, based on what he says publicly, is there any scenario where he would say something, where the imam would say something so extreme, or his funding sources were from such bad actors around the world who are working against U.S. interests? Is there any scenario where you would say, you know what, maybe we should take a closer look?
Well, I suppose we could take a closer look, Dan, but there's nothing that's going to abridge the fundamental principle that unless the sources turn out to be themselves terrorists, you simply can't override not just the constitutional issue of whether people can build there if they choose, but also the broader question that everybody in that mosque, all the people who are going to be working both at the mosque and at the Islamic Center generally, are not to be assumed to be in support of what the most radical funder of $1 or $10 or $10,000.
Dan Senor. Dancing, or if I could ask you, how much do you think midterm election politics are playing into this issue?
Well, I think that it's become a national political issue because anything related to September 11th and anything related to Ground Zero, I think, is a very emotional issue for Americans across the country, and certainly President Obama's decision to wade in on the issue has now elevated it and given it, you know, sort of a national context. But I would say, Diane, well before the president waded in on this and well before congressional candidates and members of Congress from around the country were making statements on it, New Yorkers were involved in this discussion. New Yorkers were speaking out on it. And I know Barry thinks that, you know, polls are meaningless, but we shouldn't govern based on polls. I tend to agree with them. But I do think this notion that we shouldn't have a discussion about it, that anybody that wants to have a discussion about this is somehow a bigot or a racist or is intolerant, is also inconsistent with the Constitution.
But
we can have a discussion about this, especially when a majority of New Yorkers want to have that discussion and have concerns.
Dan Senor, what about the other example cited by Barry Lynn, by Akbar Ahmed, going on around the country, the difficulties that Muslims are facing around the country?
Well, I think
it doesn't sound as though it's just New York.
I think they are two separate issues. I think that that some Muslims might have been facing problems around the country that should be dealt with. I think by and large, for all the talk that there was going to be backlash against Arab Americans and Muslim Americans after September 11th and after there's a terrorist attack, after there have been terrorist attacks here or abroad, have actually not borne out. There's been very little of it. Americans have proven to be extremely tolerant and have no interest in scapegoating. I think it's a red herring of an issue. And
all right.
I also think New York is distinct in terms of ground zero and what it represents.
Okay. Barry Lynn, do you want to comment?
Well, yeah, I was not suggesting everybody who had a legitimate concern about this, who lived in New York, was a bigot. I said that there are people like Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin who I will repeat that word because it's an ugly word and I think it's appropriate. Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin are using this to promote a very bigoted agenda. They don't live in New York either. I think the other thing is that this idea that we have all kind of come together, everybody's fine, we thought there'd be more terrible things happening to mosques after 9/11 and it didn't really happen, is belied by the very statistics, as your previous guest, and the very incidents that he discussed and discusses in his book. There is an underlying hostility that we still see. It breaks out in these ugly ways, as it will at the so-called Koran burn-in in Florida next month. These are the kinds of things that we see, and even when we don't see, the Islamic community feels from its own members of its own communities all over the country. It is not just about New York or central Pennsylvania or here in Washington, D.C.
Barry, one can take a strong position against those incidents you're citing. I strongly oppose them. I strongly criticize them and still say it doesn't mean building this mosque at ground zero, given the funding sources that have supported the imam in the past, given the statements he's made in the past. It doesn't mean that it's the best thing to do.
All right.
Maybe it should be in another location.
We're going to leave it right there, gentlemen. Dan Senor is adjunct senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, and we've also been talking with Barry Lynn. He is the executive director of the Council on Freedom of Religion. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Diane.
Now, I want to turn back to the three of you because I'd like to know how and why you came together. Rabbi, you've been called the three spiritual musketeers. Talk about that.
Well, I think that what brought us together is this very issue and what's at the core of this issue. Diane, when we speak, the three of us, I often tell the story. I'm the child of a Holocaust survivor. My mother saw things that no child should ever see. And in reality, my mother was a good mother and taught me to stay away from strangers. And after 9/11, I realized that if a professor of Islamic study and a Episcopal bishop were going to be strangers, if I didn't know them better, that there was no possibility for my children or for America to face the reality. I'm a firm believer as a Jew that all are created in the image of God. And because of that, incumbent upon me is then a great responsibility. The same that we talk about today is that with freedom comes great responsibility. And so we have to give the opportunity of freedom and that responsibility to play out. And the responsibility I felt was to bring us together. And so I, by chance, met Akbar, my wife. We were at an American Jewish committee dinner, and we got moved, and my wife sat next to Akbar. And I had just met the Bishop Chain, and I brought them both to my home for dinner because I wanted to start at home. There's a great story, if I can tell it very quickly, of a father who says he'll answer any question for his kid and wants to put him off, and he says, here, take this. And he tears up a map of the world and gives it to him, thinks he's going to have plenty of time. The kid comes back in an instant and says, Dad? And the father says, sure, I'll answer, but first answer me, how did you put the world together? That was an intricate map. He says, it was easy, Dad. On the other side was a picture of a man. And I believe that that's true. We are three men that live on work on the same street here in Washington. We're of three different faiths, and we all struggle to put ourselves together as human beings and have relationships, and that's what this is really about. This is not about religious freedom. This is about the opportunity of America to seize the responsibility to embrace each other as Americans.
Bishop Chain, what about the congregation at the cathedral here in Washington? How have the members reacted?
Well, I think they've reacted with surprise at the fallout over the issue that's before us this morning. They've been extremely engaged in interfaith dialogue and networking ever since 2002 when I first came to the diocese. We started the Abrahamic Roundtable. My colleagues here are very much a part of that, and that has really brought together scholars and religious leaders for these many years to discuss these issues. I think what we forget is the role of religion in all of this. We talk about the structure. We talk about politics. The role of religion and the thing that the three of us share in common is the word compassion and the ability to engage in conversation.
The Right Reverend John Shane, he's Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington. We'll take just a short break. When we come back, time to open the phones for your comments.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. By the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. This is NPR.
Advances in assisted reproductive technology have expanded for people wanting to have a baby, but the law has not kept up with the science. Legal and ethical frontiers of modern parenthood, the Diane Rehm Show. Next hour. And our topic this morning is the mosque proposed for building at the site of 9/11, very near to it, in New York City. I have three individuals here in the studio. Akbar Ahmed, he's chair of Islamic Studies at American University, the author of many books, his latest, Journey into America. Rabbi Bruce Lustig is senior rabbi of the Washington Hebrew Congregation, and the Right Reverend John Chain, he's bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington. Let's open the phones, 800-433-8850. First to Mike in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Good morning. You're on the air. Hello, Mike. Are you there? All right, let's try Westchester, New York. Corey, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on your program.
Certainly.
I'm very concerned about this issue. I'm a retired New York history teacher, and the first plane flew past me, and we lost a nephew with Cantor Fitzgerald. My question is this. Is if Muslims in this country wish to be accepted by mainstream America, there's one thing that they're going to have to do. They're going to have to acknowledge that there's a dark side in Islam and that it must be... they must refuse to follow that part of the Quran. If they don't accept that there is this dark side, if they don't acknowledge that there is a dark side, then what they're doing is they're practicing a kind of called kitchen within that, telling you all of the aspects of the religion. And that's a very important concept. It must be known to the Muslim world that Muslim America is opposed to what's going on, and they're going to have to be active about it.
All right. Thanks for your call, Professor Ahmed.
The point Corey raises is one that we met across America as we traveled and talked to people. A lot of people had this perception, and they're right in a sense. Muslims need to be explaining themselves, Muslim leaders and scholars, much, much more vigorously. There's a great gap between understanding between the two. Corey, you also need to understand that it is in America's interest today, and I'm quoting General David Petraeus, General McChrystal, who was recently in Afghanistan, head of the troops there, that we need to win the hearts and minds of the Muslim world. And believe me, Corey, it's very difficult to win anyone's hearts and minds if you go start abusing their God and their prophet and their religion and their holy book. This is something that America stands for, which is religious pluralism. Read your founding fathers. Read the founding fathers on Islam. John Adams on the prophet. He said he's one of the greatest truth seekers of history. Franklin on the prophet, a model of compassion. And the Quran that the pastor wants to burn in Florida is the Quran that inspired Thomas Jefferson himself have the first iftar dinner at the White House.
To Kent in Athens, Ohio. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. Thank you very much for taking my call in such an intriguing discussion.
Good.
I just had a comment, you know, as far as I wholeheartedly agree with the rabbi's comments before the break. I think we should definitely try to remember that America is founded on freedom of everything, not just expression, but religious expression. You know, in my personal opinion, we should build the mosque on the actual site of Ground Zero, you know, in order to show the Muslim world that the actions of a few do not affect the idiocracies of the many.
Bishop Payne.
Well, I tell you, I think that it would be, going back to where the mosque should be built is one thing. I think the other issue is the issue of how this is playing out both in the United States and in the Muslim world. I would say this to you, Ken, I appreciate your comments about where you think it should be built. I think it should not be built there, but I think it should have the visibility of being close to the center. I think it is a place where we can begin to address what's really happening throughout the world right now. And what's happening throughout the world is Muslims throughout the world are looking at what's happening at the United States right now and saying, we really are not a part of your life. And we are really offended by what you have to say. And Corey, who was an earlier caller, said something about the dark side of Islam. Well, what people have to understand is there's a dark side to Christianity. It's the Crusades.
So there is a dark side to almost every religion we can think of, Rabbi Lustig.
Well, I wouldn't go and say there's a dark side to Judaism. However, you know, in reality, I think that we ought to focus on the opportunity that's here. And I think that if this mosque goes forward, there is a great responsibility and opportunity that comes with this freedom. And it is an opportunity for moderate Muslims to be able to embrace an opportunity of coming together like the three of us have come together. And I hope whatever house of worship comes up around the sacred ground of 9/11 will be a place that embraces this opportunity for dialogue and an opportunity for human beings to engage and learn about each other so that we can put down the type of evil that a few have penetrated against our great nation.
Here's an email from Eva who says, please clarify the function of the building. I keep hearing mosque and interfaith center being used. Can you do that for us, Professor Akbar?
Well, Dan, I appreciate you asking me, but I have not been consulted by the Imam Rauf or have any idea of the plans. And strangely enough, I, like so many millions of Muslims, are now stuck with having to talk about it. I understand that it is going to be more than a mosque, that there's going to be a recreation aspect to it. There'll be a swimming pool and a place where people can actually, more of a kind of center, a Muslim center, than a house of worship only.
Bishop Chang.
Back in 2003, when I first came to Washington, there were several meetings at the Hellenic Center to discuss the possibility of developing such a site center that would be Muslim in component, but would bring together people from all three Abrahamic faiths and other religions for conversation and reconciliation. And knowing Faisal as well as I do, I mean, we've had these conversations for quite some time about the fact that this is not just a worship center for Muslims. It is a gift to the people of New York and to this country to engage in the kind of conversation that we have not had, that we need to have.
And to Orlando, Florida. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I just have a few comments real quick. Gentlemen, thank you so much for the discussion. It's been great. Just wanted to say that as a Republican and a Christian and a retired soldier who has served in the Middle East, I wanted to say that I'm very disappointed in my Republican leadership and the fact that they've tried to turn this into an issue that is definitely against the Constitution on their views. I'd rather see them take a more positive stance on this whole thing and be more supportive of our religious freedoms in this country. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you so much. Interesting comments. Here's an email from Sharon in Cincinnati who says it's been 9 years since 9/11. If, quote, everyone in New York, unquote, is so opposed to the mosque being built near Ground Zero, why didn't other groups initiate some other plans for that particular building and site? Any comments?
Diane, I appreciate you looking at me, but I promise you I don't
speak
for the Imam.
You don't know. You don't know. Were there any other sites proposed? Didn't Governor Patterson step in and offer another site?
There were other sites that were explored, and these sites go back many years from the time of this controversy. The issue was being in the general area where this tragedy occurred. That was absolutely a very important component of this, because it was felt that it would be a place where the grieving, which has not really taken place, I mean, for those who have lost loved ones, the grieving has taken place. This nation never had the opportunity to grieve over 9/11. Immediately after we went in to the process of dealing with the deaths, not long after that, we immediately went into the war with Iraq. And we have never had the opportunity to come together and deal with this huge loss in our life, not just the loss of lives, but the loss of our identity as a country.
Including, John, hundreds of Muslims who died on that
Absolutely.
Day in New York.
Let's go to High Point, North Carolina. Saqib, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment. I think as a Muslim, it is important to point out that there's a difference between the terrorists and the majority of peaceful Muslims who are going to be worshiping in this center. And in this whole argument, these lines have been blurred. You know, the Muslims and the terrorists, it's just been, they're just joined together. I think there's a very clear difference. And in this community center, there's going to be only peaceful Muslim worship and not the terrorists. So I think it should be made very clear.
Professor Akbar.
Diane, on this journey, and Saqib is right, we met hundreds of Muslims throughout the United States, you know, talking to me one-to-one or talking to my team, who said this is the best place in the world to be living as a Muslim. Many of them said, we admire Thomas Jefferson. Now, a Muslim admiring one of the founding fathers in private is really a huge, huge advance on understanding between Muslims and American culture. And Saqib is right. If you were to condemn all Muslims as a monolith, which they're not in the United States, there's a very diverse community. The whole Muslim world is here. But when you demonize them or create a monolith of them, you are pushing all Muslims, moderate, literalist, mystic, into one category, and that is always dangerous, considering, Diane, that the homegrown terrorist phenomena is beginning now to appear in some frequency, and I am alarmed at that. And again, we need to be connecting the dots in terms of the community, the dissatisfaction, and, of course, the reaction that will take place.
All right. To Alexandria, Virginia, Samuel, you have a point to make.
Thank you, Diane, for taking my call.
Certainly.
Your earlier guest talked about tolerance for voices of moderation. The first thing I want to say is that religious voices of moderation should not stoke the furnace of religious hatred. I just don't understand why they're trying to use this opportunity to, quote-unquote, bring the faith together or demonstrate that America is a free society. Religious voices of moderation, if this is a gift, which one of your guests talked about, then American people are going to look that gift holes in the mouth. It means you should have presented another gift. Do not use this as an opportunity for gift giving, because it's extremely fraught with sensitivity. Islam should not be used as a guinea pig to confirm American religious freedom or American liberalism. There is a panoply, a rich panoply of opportunities out there. Go for them. Leave this sensitive issue alone and let Islam grow and flourish in the United States. I'm not a Muslim, but I'm making an argument that all Muslims should be making. And I think the forces of moderation that one of your guests talked about are really endangering the harmony that could potentially exist between Christians, between Jews and Muslims, by exploiting this issue.
Rabbi Lustig.
Well, I'm not sure if I understand fully the nature of the question, but I do believe that there's a sensitivity that has to go on both sides. When we've talked about this issue amongst ourselves, both Akbar and I agree that there needs to be transparency in funding. When we talk about this opportunity, we also agree that there needs to be clarity in terms of the leaders of this mosque, that they speak out definitively against terrorism or connection to terrorist organizations. I think that when we talked about an opportunity is that when we see America looking and beginning to isolate any group, I think that we have to be very careful. It's a slippery slope. And so this is an opportunity for moderate voices to come forward.
Rabbi Bruce Lustig, he's senior rabbi at the Washington Hebrew Congregation. You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And to Jana in Rockville, Indiana, you're on the air.
Hello, Diane.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I find this discussion wonderful. I appreciate all the comments everyone has said on all sides. I myself am a well-educated person, and I have to say that this sounds so incredibly academic with passion, but academic, because to me, what is really being missed here is a discussion of grief, and I do believe that the national grief will have to go through some kind of healing process, which will take this kind of discussion, but I feel, and I'm using academic as not a complimentary term, I feel that somehow or another, the discussion has gotten far afield from the people who are experiencing the grief most intensely. The issue actually is the location of the mosque, and I'm someone who wants to protect Muslim people, wants to protect Muslim Americans. But the location of the mosque that is not respectful of the survivors of 9/11.
Bishop Shane.
Well, I respect those comments, but I want to go back to what Akbar had said earlier. There were a number of Muslims who died in this horrible event of 9/11. I don't believe this discussion is academic at all. I think this discussion...
John, thank you for speaking on behalf of academics, because I do feel as a professor that...
You know, what I would have to say to the caller is that if we were to not place this mosque was not placed in New York City, what that does is it legitimizes the evil and despicable intent of those people who flew those aircraft into the Twin Towers. What it does is it allows them to say mission accomplished, because what this is doing is it's dividing this country, it's roiling the religious waters, it is really challenging the identity of this country and where it is in terms of what it's supposed to stand for and what it is doing.
And a number of our callers and emailers have said if Timothy McVeigh had been deemed a Christian, would there have been an objection to a Christian church being placed near that Murrow building? So one wonders. This discussion is just a beginning. I can see it's going to go on and on in newspapers, in kitchens, in schoolrooms all over the country and indeed around the world. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Right Reverend John Chain, Rabbi Bruce Lustig, and Akbar Ahmed. Thank you all, and thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.